Hey, nice shirt.
Oh, we're wearing the same shirt.
Hey, we are wearing the same shirt. We are wearing the same shirt. We're wearing the same shirt. We're wearing the same shirt. Wearing the same shirt. Hey, I'm wearing the same shirt.
Wearing the same shirt.
Wearing the same shirt. Hey, wearing the same shirt. Wearing the same shirt.
Oh.
No, actually, we're not. That's, your ghost face is not holding a knife.
Oh.
Mine is.
I never even noticed that before.
Which makes me a little bit better, I think.
I don't think it makes you any... It doesn't make you better than me.
I'm so sorry.
You don't have to be sorry.
Talk to me.
There's no reason to be sorry because I'm better than you, actually. I'm better than you.
Good morning, Sweet World! And welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, May 10th, 2023. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, that's Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the Bone Breaker's biggest fan, Trey Kirby.
I got an AO.
And last but not least, over yonder, making the magic happen, super producer, JD.
Hello.
There he is, and here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Like the vid, comment away, subscribe to No Dunks if you haven't done that. We are oh so close to 69,000 subs.
Nice. Oh, man, I thought you were going to do it.
Go get your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com so you can have the same shirt as your friend and then sing that little ditty that we saw there in the cold open.
I'm waiting, actually. I was going to surprise everybody with a 69,699. That's what I'm going to screenshot when we get to subs.
And we are pretty
great.
Close.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah,
super close.
All right, who's going to be
might
the
happen.
Hero?
Might happen now.
We got a new No Bunts for you if you're a baseball fan. That just went up on the Athletic Baseball Show feed. Tass and Joel talking about the five best things in baseball this week.
Yeah, we had a blast. Really good stories going on in Major League Baseball. Joel got to assign corporate names to Major League Baseball teams like they do in Asia.
Mm.
Your Swiss Chalet Blue Jays, for instance, if you know the Swiss Chalet cool. chain, and they give you a little dish at the end of your meal to wash your hands in.
Yeah, a little lemon in it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. But apparently they stopped doing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
COVID.
That's what I said, but it's actually more clean than COVID.
That's a good point.
It's reducing germs.
Yeah, I did.
It's like killing
that.
Germs.
It was just a little bowl of water with lemon. With some lemon in it. Yeah.
Don't have to use a napkin. You get to wash your hands in a bowl.
Okay. Anyway. I'll be checking that out.
Yeah. And we talk about baseball.
No Bunts. Go find that on the YouTube feed, the Athletic Baseball Show, or of course the podcast feed if you want to listen to the guys talk about the MLB and other baseball leagues across the world. Before we get into it, happy Wedgie Day to everyone.
Oh. Mm.
Yes. May 10th is Wedgie Day. I think it became that because this was the day we, for the first time, hit 50 wedgies in a season. Marcus Smart got us over the hump there way back when, but no wedgies last night. We'll get them today. Today is actually Wedgie Day. We could set the all-time record for wedgies in a season if we get two tonight. I think Durant nearly had one last night, if
yeah,
I remember
close.
Correctly.
Yep.
Yeah, stuck for a second and then dropped out. But happy Wedgie Day to everyone that celebrates. Let's get into the games from last night. We'll start in the Eastern Conference. Joel Embiid scoring 33. Pretty dominant on both ends, Tass, as the 76ers beat the Celtics handily. 115-103 for the 3-2 series lead. They are one win away from the conference finals. What do you think?
That was a blow-up in Boston.
Yeah, they crushed them.
That was a pretty embarrassing loss for the Celtics. You mentioned Embiid's 33. He hasn't had to have a super dominant game in this series quite yet. Came back in game two, shook the rust off. He was subpar. But since then, yeah, he's been rolling 30, 34, and 33. I was just so surprised that the Celtics weren't pushing the ball in this one. The old Celtics problem of not getting into their sets, just taking forever, especially when you have a slightly hobbled Embiid who did drop the knee brace. But they only had five transition points. Just watching this team, it's maddening, I'm sure, as a Celtics fan, how long they take. And I think a lot of the blame has to go on Tatum for running the offense the way he did yesterday. Of course, he was cold shooting the ball. His first shot from three-point land, way left. You don't want to see that. And the fact that he didn't really rectify it. He had some nice passes, but he was getting into the rim, and a couple times he just decided to pass out to the three-point line. Nobody had the urgency to dominate. what are they missing in that locker room for them to go back home and not have the urgency to get into their sets? Are they missing an Ime Udoka just getting on them, being that aggressor to start things on their possessions? Because it was maddening. Five transition points and just standing out on an island, not passing to each other enough, and just taking so long. And then, yeah, the Sixers have obviously got the momentum, sucked the life out of them. To see that at home was very, very odd. And the Celtics, it's not over, but how can you possibly think they're going to win this series after watching that at home?
It is important to say it's definitely not over. We saw this last year with the Celtics go down 3-2 to the Bucks.
They have.
And
done
it looked
it
like they were dead in the water. And then Tatum had a monster game 6, and they go on to win in 7 and obviously make the finals. But Philly's three best players last night, TK, you and I in playback were watching this one. They had this game under control. Embiid, Maxey, Harden. And then they had other guys contributing. Tobias Harris, House off the bench. Everybody chipped in for Philadelphia, led by Joel Embiid, I thought, on both ends last night.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I feel like this was probably the best game that the Sixers have played in the playoffs so far. But I also feel like Embiid didn't play out of his mind. Harden didn't play out of his mind. Maxey, probably his best game of the playoffs so far. But that was basically because Harden and Embiid were so good together. It felt like Harden could get the perfect shot for the Sixers every time he was handling the ball. Anytime that Boston would put two on the ball, it was either an easy drop-off to Embiid for a 15-footer. The guy didn't score a restricted area basket last night. It was all jumpers from Embiid. Or if somebody actually came up to Embiid, he would be able to find Maxey. Seemed like Maxey made a three-pointer every time Boston was trying to cut into the lead, but Philadelphia looked perfect last night. They played defense, they got good shots, and the Celtics at this point are a live-by-the-three, die-by-the-three kind of team. That's the thing that's missing to me. They don't really have an identity besides making three-pointers, and a lot of that is losing Udoka. He was the toughest guy on the team last year, which is a problem when it's your coach. But look, they went 9 for 32 from 3 before garbage time last night. The white guys hit some when the game was completely out of hand, but the Celtics have to hit threes to win. Otherwise, they're not able to fall back on their defense like they were last year. Robert Williams almost won Defensive Player of the Year, and he's a non-factor in this series. Marcus Smart is an offensive player at this point. So, I don't know. The Celtics this season, a lot of the same things that happened to them happened last season, but it feels different to me. So, I don't know. They just got to shoot well. That's how they win. That's the only way they win.
Yeah, and if you're going to look back and at this series at the end and look at this game and say sometimes we don't shoot well, we lose this way or we win this way, you're gonna say, oh, game one they gave up that opportunity there to win against a Joel Embiidless Sixers team where they imploded basically on both ends, and then game four the double on Joel Embiid that allowed James Harden for that three-point shot. But it feels different because the threes are just raining down and they're just deciding not to go at the rim. It's just
shot free throws are gone to the rim, though.
Yeah, and the way, I do think this, when you consider the defensive end, this was Embiid's best game of the playoffs so far, probably his best game since he put 52 on the Celtics at the end of the regular season, because of what he did getting in the heads of Celtics guys attacking. I thought two or three times Tatum made a business decision as the offensive player, going, well, no, Embiid's right there. No chance. We saw the Embiid chase down block after his bad turnover on Jaylen Brown. He had that other one, TK, where Embiid stopped the drive to the rim. The pass was dished off to the other guy right by the net, and he somehow still got there and blocked that one. I thought he was so locked in. Kirk Goldsberry had the numbers per the tracking. The Celtics went 8 for 26 when Embiid was the primary defender and 4 of 15 when he contested their shot. And then he included the four block shots there, some of those of highlight nature. I thought he was incredible on that end, and it compounded this idea of the Celtics missing three, so you're like, okay, attack the rim, but then he's there, and so they're in their head a little bit, and it goes to what Trey said as well, that's not really their game. Tatum got to the line a lot.
Free throws. Yeah, he Smart took 10 free throws. Yep. The Celtics as a team took 34. They shot more free throws than Philadelphia did, and that's a Grifton kind of team. Mm-hmm. So Boston was doing what they could, they just didn't hit threes. And I mean, when they don't hit threes, it's kind of, they can't win because, look at Al Horford. He was getting lit up by Embiid the entire night. He has to make threes on the other side to make him worthy of playing. And he went 0 for 7. And he had wide open looks all night. This guy led the league in three-point percentage this season. And he's missing wide open looks. That's really the game right there. Because if Horford can't play defense and he can't play offense, he's their best big guy. Then what?
Yeah, I do think the shot selection, even though they do end up shooting threes, just happened way too late and were sort of forced in shot clocks. Like, they just weren't getting into their stuff. And the point guard, as what Jason Tatum was last night, that's what he was. He was running the show mm-hmm. for the entire thing. He was getting up every shot himself. And he did get early. He was making passes. He did have a few of them where he didn't want to lay it up at the rim. I don't think it was a Joel Embiid thing. He just decided that he was passing out to start this game. He took 27 shots, shot poorly from three-point land, and wasn't running the team properly. Wasn't getting into his sets. And whether that's
they don't have sets.
They have no sets.
They have no sets.
They have to start earlier, just moving the ball. I mean, that's...
But
they
even talk about it. Like, they just run a random offense, I believe, is the word Marcus Smart uses.
Randomness is the thing.
Yeah, there's no...
Sure.
There's no
it's
like
a randomizer.
I mean, the Sixers have, obviously, Harden and Embiid pick and roll action they can go to. You can go to Embiid in the post or at the free throw line as a post-up action. Run off that. The Celtics, they really... It's tough. Like, tell me, what's a play that they run? You know, we see obviously pick and roll action up top like every team, but I'm agreeing with you, Tass. It's just like a lot of like it's there's not a lot of there was no forcing of any really action last night, and the Sixers punched them in the face first, and they sort of cowered. They tried to get back into it by shooting threes, and it's worked before, but nobody could really hit them. Especially
yeah,
Horford. Over
that is that is the Celtics' game plan. Unfortunately, like I think Tatum was their best player last night. Like clearly, nobody else came along for the ride in the second half.
Well, he wasn't letting Brown along for the ride. I mean, he started poorly. He's one for seven to start.
He starts poorly. He's had two back-to-back slow starts. Jason Tatum has, and it puts the Celtics behind the eight ball where they're chasing, and the way they chase is try to shoot threes. Yep. And then they just take turns trying to shoot threes is really what it feels like. And it's like, I got to make back all 20 points right now by hitting 1 3-pointer. And it never works out that way. So, yeah, I mean, on the flip side, the Sixers basically shot 50-40-90 for a whole game. So they played pretty well on both ends of the court. And then the Celtics just, I don't know, they just don't seem to always come through when you expect them to come through. But it's when the cards are down that they are at their absolute best. But it's so disappointing for the Celtics to be on the verge of elimination, and the quotes coming out of the locker room are just, yeah, we just didn't have it tonight for some reason. It ain't March. You got to have it in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean, I know a lot of people are questioning Mazzulla as the head coach of this team. Maybe his youth, his obviously inexperience, his coaching style compared to like a Udoka and stuff like that. It's pretty glaring right now. And he's gotten nothing from some of these guys that were instrumental to their finals run, especially Time Lord. That was wild. Boston's offense, they just couldn't string together like any sort of like consecutive basket, especially in the second half. I think they did it once in the fourth quarter. There was a Brogdon layup and a Tatum and one. And then that was sort of it. And credit to the Sixers because they always answered it. Maxey hit a three and Embiid hit a three. In between that, you had Jaylen Brown missing some free throws. But, you know, Maxey the 30 points, that was huge. He had played like garbage against the Celtics all regular season, had sort of been very, very quiet in this series too. Harden took over, obviously, in the two wins in games 1 and 4, but that was huge. And Tobias Harris and House, I mean, House was a bit of a surprise. House Jr. coming. Dan House. He suddenly is just called Dan. I've noticed now. Yeah, I'm saying, you know, the rights to Ricky Sanchez. They just call him Dan House. He's like a new guy here. But 10 points on 5 of 7 shooting, 5 boards in great energy. And Tobias Harris, the box score is not going to blow you away. He was in a little bit of a foul trouble. Can you remember him playing that hard in a playoff game before? Like, he was taking on, like, some Tucker mentality.
Oh, yeah, they feel like they've won this series. I mean, you could see it, Tyrese Maxey running down the throat of the Celtics. Well, the Celtics should be the more athletic team. They've got the younger roster overall, the younger starting lineup. The Embiid is, air quotes, hobbled. Mm-hmm. I mean, they should be going at him, and to only score 5 transition points and to have a really poor efficiency in transition versus they're actually scoring better in the half court, which doesn't make sense. They lack this urgency, and you could blame Mazzulla for them not getting into sets faster, but I think that's just the biggest thing. It's on Tatum, and to some degree, it's on Smart. And yeah, Jaylen Brown, who had a really good game offensively. I know PJ Tucker wore him down and was doing a really good job of that, and they've got the attitude on that side. But Jaylen Brown was damn efficient one more time. And
he just disappears every game.
Yeah, they every have to get him game. Involved.
I mean, really. Yeah, but that's the problem when you have Marcus Smart as your point guard. Like, he's a good playmaker, but he's not a great playmaker, and he's not a distributor. And then Tatum has taken steps, certainly. 5 assists last night. He handles the ball, and he gets good shots, I do think. But also, he's more of a scorer. So Brown will go quarters without touching the ball. And then when he does touch the ball, it's almost 50-50 if he's going to get to the rim or if he's going to give it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had the second best offense this season because they were good at randomizing faster. And that's where Jaylen Brown would touch the ball when they would actually get into sets faster. It's just taking
forever. They look slower
forever.
Than the Sixers, which is weird.
Yeah.
Anything else from this game? Anyone else you wanted to point out? Obviously brought up House scoring layups in transition. He had a couple of those. I think Harden threw him an alley-oop at one point. I mean, he was feeling it. Again, this guy was like, I think people saw that game last night and were like, House is on this team? The guy that played with Harden on the Rockets? Is that him? Anything else from this one? Or performances?
No. It was... Everybody's doing it now, like pulling out a guy in game 4, game 5, right?
That's right.
Lonnie Walker, now Daniel House. There's the Landry Shamet game. It's happening.
Bruce Brown, maybe last night. We'll get to that game. He had a big one. Yeah. I lost some of it in the
he's
blowout.
He's been playing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the other guy's just, oh yeah,
true.
He's on our bench. Pull him out.
So do you have any faith here in the Celtics comeback to win this series?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
I don't know about to come back and win the series, but I still think this could be a 7-gamer, for sure. I mean, who knows what'll happen in Game 7, the Celtics won 2 Game 7s last year. Like you're saying, they bounced back against the Bucks last season. When the Celtics look beat, that's when they're most dangerous. So I assume they're probably going to win by 30 in Game 6.
It probably will go like that.
It's possible, for sure.
I did love, I'm trying to find it right now. There was a great tweet from Sixers fan Andrew Unterberger talking about like the crowds that both fan bases. There's no real home court advantage in this
Nobody
series because they're
team.
Terrified of their own team. And that definitely was the case in Boston last night, and we've seen already in this series, even in game 1, it sort of happened there in Philadelphia as well. They're just like, no one wants to get too excited. Everyone's worried, fall's going to floor out. The floor is going to fall out. And we've watched too much basketball.
Yeah, Simmons said the same thing. It's interesting. They both literally said the same thing. Nobody trusts their team. Everybody is sitting on their hands, and then the Sixers come out and they stole that thing. How often do you have a game 5 blowout like that on the opposing team's floor? And that's...
It happened for the Celtics last year, right? Didn't the Bucks come in and smash them?
Was that then?
I think
Tatum
so, yeah.
Went for 48?
I think that's right.
In game 6, we'll see if they can replicate that. Somebody else is going to have to help out here, of course. I mean, we keep saying this in every series, like the stars do their part, and yeah, you need a secondary or a third guy. And the Sixers, I mean, again, I don't want to gloss over the fact.
It was a closer game, though.
Was it a closer? Yeah. I don't want to gloss over the fact that like everybody played well for the Sixers. Everybody. Embiid as their MVP guy. Maxey was really the secondary guy last night that we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for, and he just felt loose, and he was just like obviously letting it fly from deep. Harden had a good, solid game. I mean, James Harden didn't shoot a lot. Like,
no.
He was like more than happy to facilitate and sort of let Maxey, like we said, take on that secondary scoring role. And Tobias, I thought, had the dog in him last night. Again, I'm shocked. I cannot think of many Tobias Harris games where he's like the leading rebounder at the half. And, like, just had an attitude to him. And then House was sort of found money there, scoring in transition, especially for them. Good.
Yeah, Embiid hasn't had a monster quite yet. You know, 34 is his max in this series. That could happen at home. You've got Harden with his good luck charm. John Howe, I assume, going to be there.
That's a good
point. Right. The victim of the MSU shooting. I'm sure, hopefully he'll be there for James Harden. Yeah, they've got momentum. That's absolutely true. But yeah, the Celtics, they are that team. Back against the wall. That's when they perform.
And there is the whole thing. Whether you believe in it or not, Doc Rivers has found himself up in many series before. And his team has caved. I mean, he's had like, what, 3-1 series leads? Which means he had 3-2 series leads that also went on to be lost. So, yeah. It's like, I don't think Sixers fans are like, yeah, going to the conference finals, baby. You know, we'll see you in Miami for game one.
No way.
Yeah, not at all. And you can't blame them. All right, well, let's move on unless there's anything else from game five. Thanks, everybody, that joined us on playback. We had a blast thinking about maybe doing a game six later this week, probably with that one being the early start time. But the late game last night, the Nuggets beat the Suns 118-102 in their game five, pivotal game five, to regain their series lead. Trey, let's start with you on this one. Really close first half, and then I screwed up everything tweeting, I think we're going to get an instant classic here in the second half of this game five, and the Nuggets just blew them out of the water in the third quarter, and then we even got garbage time.
But yeah, I got some garby. Garby time. I thought it was going to play out similar to the game where we saw Jokic and Devin Booker going head-to-head in the third quarter. Jokic did his part. I think he scored 17 in the third. That was the huge quarter for the Nuggets, but Devin Booker finally didn't have it for once and for all in this playoff series. He only went, I think, 1-for-8 or 1-for-9 in the third quarter, and that's when Denver really took the lead. We've been talking a lot about Booker and how well he's been playing so far, but it kind of obscured the fact that the Suns have needed 80 points combined from Devin Booker and Kevin Durant to get these wins. Only 54 combined last night between Booker and KD. The role players didn't play well for Phoenix either, being back on the road. So the Nuggets are able to win big. They looked a lot like the Game 1 Nuggets to me. A lot faster. They were making a point to push the pace on misses, on makes. They were ball pressuring Devin Booker, throwing him into some tough looks. They looked better shooting. They got 31 points in transition. They got 32 assists on 42 makes. Like, this was just a nice Denver Nuggets game. Getting good contributions from the compost crew as well. Bruce Brown was incredible. Christian Brown was almost as good with his defense on Kevin Durant and his dunks. Even Jeff Green made a couple of layups. So, really nice one for the Nuggets. I mean, Jokic, he kind of dominated this game and it just felt like he was cruising along. Yeah. No big deal. So, good win. It feels like in this series, the Suns are going to squeak by and the Nuggets are going to smash when they win.
It's true. The Jokic minutes were fun. You try and defend him in a bunch of different ways. They fronted him, even Big Eight and fronting him at times, and they're just going over the top. They just found a way. Durant looks small when he gets him in the post. It was dominant. It was a real classic home court win, the way they're running out in the first quarter. They had 13 first quarter transition points, but a great response in the second quarter from the Suns.
Yeah.
They came back, and they were obviously trying to keep Devin Booker slowed down in transition. The guy was averaging 10 fast break points per game himself coming into this game. And the Nuggets were trying to slow him down, and they did in the third quarter. But he had a great first half and 19 points. He was feeling good. Durant, unfortunately, he was slow to start. 1-of-8 to start, and then the 5 turnovers in the end.
I thought he was horrible. I think he had the greatest 26-11-7, or sorry, the worst 26-11-7 line maybe of his career for sure, and of maybe of any player. That's a good line. Like, that's an incredible line. I thought he was bad. Yeah, I mean, he looked gassed, no doubt. I mean, he's played a lot of minutes here. And
he played all 24 first half minutes, right?
And they did a great job of obviously just trying to get up into space as much as possible. He was taking Durant shots that you know he can hit in his sleep, and then some of them were bouncing out, but like, he was missing free throws, the turnovers. Watch him in the second half in that third quarter. His defensive effort, I throw in air quotes, he's standing around. He's probably just tired. He is doing nothing.
He's not doing
nothing. And so I just thought it was a brutal game.
It was weird because Nuggets are up 15 first in the first quarter. Suns come back. They've taken the lead on a Terrence Ross 3 late in the second. So you go into half. You got to feel pretty good if you're the Suns. But then in that third quarter, I thought it was a weird move from Monty Williams, who wants a three-point shooter instead of Josh Okogie out there, who's struggling. They go with Landry Shamet, and that just woke up Jamal Murray. Did not have a good first half.
No.
And Jamal Murray is that kind of guy. He's a fake Canadian. He's not real. He likes to be sparked by something on the floor that gets him going. And he saw Shamet on the other side. He just went at him. And that woke him up big time. Big time. And I'm not sure if they try and start him in game number 6 because they don't trust Josh Okogie. They want somebody else who can shoot the ball. I get it. Because they're such a top-heavy team. But I don't know. Murray likes going at Shamet. He likes it. He likes going at that beard. So that really changed things. And it was just a classic home court game where you saw the Nuggets take care of all three games so far at home, and they are even so confident that they can go into the Phoenix Suns huddle and do a little I'm listening to your huddle type thing, as they did at the end of the third quarter in a playoff game. This is their home court. They can do what they want. Bruce Brown goes in there, and then Jokic follows in. Like, they're just joking around. We're up 20. We can do whatever the hell we want. And that leads to a little skirmish where Kevin Durant gets called for a tech for pushing out Jokic. What else is he supposed to do? It's a huddle. I mean, just let him stand there?
Monty Williams said after the game he thinks it should be a rule that you can't do it.
That was a great quote. This should be a written rule. I assume it's an unwritten rule, don't sneak into the huddles, yeah. But we need it legislated.
I would love to hear the halftime locker room speeches from Michael Malone last night to his Nuggets compared to, let's say, Joe Mazzulla with the Celtics. I'm going to guess they were very, very different, because they came out, the Nuggets, in the second half pissed off, especially Jamal Murray, who had suddenly like this fire in him, this intensity. He's like, you cannot guard me, Shamit, and was like stepping to him, smirking at him, gave away a tech because of it. He didn't care. I think Malone must have laid into this team. Like, this is game five. We're at home. This could be the series. We should be up way more. We played really well in the first half until we couldn't hit a shot in the second quarter, but we're only up three, right? And if Booker shoots that one from half court, you know, half a second earlier, it's a tie game at half. I think he must have laid into this team. And holy crap, did Jamal Murray listen to that? And Jokic, who was a monster in the third quarter, finished with 29, 13, and 12, his 10th career playoff triple-double, broke a tie with Wilt Chamberlain for the most by any center in NBA history. He made 10 of his final 11 shots. And this guy right now, Jokic, is averaging 31 points per game, 13 boards, 9.5 assists in the playoffs, shooting 53% from the field and 49% from three. This is what he's doing in the playoffs right now, as they take the 3-2 series lead here in the second round. But, man, I mean, again, I'm just guessing. Maybe Malone said nothing. Something tells me he did because he lost his voice. I think he laid into them. And, holy man, they delivered in that third quarter. And maybe, then it was over.
Maybe he was angry that Jokic gave Matt Ishbia the ball pregame.
Oh, I love that. That was fun. Could be it. Fun little clip. I think we have it, actually. Yeah, the pregame clip going around of
Jokic finishing his warm-up, walks by Matt Ishbia, tosses in the ball. Oh, we're having a laugh.
I love that he gets rid of it right away.
Yeah, he's like, I am not holding this.
Don't want to keep that one.
You're not going to get a photo of me holding this ball. You think Ishbia regrets saying that Jokic shouldn't have been suspended for this game?
yeah, I mean, lean into it, really, if you're going to...
Actually, what I meant to say was we don't want the MVP out there with his triple-doubles. Whoops.
Anything else from this one?
Interesting that he traveled there to Denver to take this one in. Has he been on the road for the first two games? I don't know.
I would assume so. New owner?
You don't want to miss this.
Yeah, come on. This is why he bought the team for billions of dollars. To have courtside seats on the road or at home. I don't know for sure, but I would think so. Yeah, just good stuff here from the Nuggets to regain control of this series. You went over a lot of the things that they sort of like fixed from their losses in Phoenix. The transition. Defense on Booker, especially, at least trying to find him early and pushing up on him. Them scoring in transition, just easier points. And hitting threes obviously helps any team. They hit 13 of 27. And Bruce Brown, again, he had 25 off the bench. You don't want to call it a Bruce Brown game. I get that. That's fair. I mean, he's in the rotation.
I'm happy calling it a Bruce Brown game.
Well, it was like the 25 is amazing for him. This guy does not score 25 points per game. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, it must be his, like, I think it's his second highest scoring game of the season. And some of it came like, what, that third quarter, late third quarter, fourth quarter bridge where they like blew the game open. But he was making an impact, and we just keep talking about with the Nuggets, Trey. It's like, if Michael Porter Jr. can hit shots, and then obviously a guy like Bruce Brown or one of their guys on the bench can contribute in the scoring department, you got Jokic. You got Murray, who's like, you know, a bit of a wild card from time to time in terms of like he's going to go for 35 or maybe struggle. That can be enough when you're running everything through your point center there. And Michael Porter Jr., he had 19 points on 5 threes. A lot of early threes,
which I thought was big, kind of put the Suns in a tough predicament. But yeah, the role players play better at home, and that has been the case for both teams so far in this series. They say a series doesn't start until a road team wins a game, so still waiting. Pretty good series so far for it not starting yet.
Yeah, that's great.
Very entertaining.
All right, so fun games last night. Big wins there from the Sixers and the Nuggets to take the 3-2 series lead. We will take our first break, and when we come back, we got all defensive teams to talk about, and then we'll look ahead to tonight's other two series that could end in five. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, still here in the Classic Factory. Uh-oh, there's a fruit fly hovering around. It showed up at the start of the second block yesterday, too. It loves the awards because Defensive Player of the Year, Jaren Jackson Jr., headlined the NBA's all-defensive first team, which was announced on Tuesday afternoon. Triple J joined on the first team by two other finalists for that top defensive honor. We had Bucks center Brook Lopez and Cavs power forward Evan Mobley, along with guards Drew Holiday and Alex Caruso. The Bulls are back in the first team all defense. Five players named to the first team made it pretty easily. They landed on at least 75 of the 100 ballots. You see the second team here. You got Jackson's teammate for how long? Dylan Brooks. He was one of five players named to the all-defensive second team, joined by Raptors forward OG Anunoby, Warriors forward Draymond Green. What's this, like his eighth selection, something like that? Heat center Bam Adebayo and Celtics guard Derek White. And we got the voting breakdown here, at least for the first two teams. A lot of other guys' tasks getting some votes because there's a lot of great defenders in this league. But was there a snub to you? Is there a name that you're like
the old D snub?
Yeah, are you like, hold on, where's so and so in the mix here?
Jaden McDaniels is surprising to me. Of the great Wolves. Defender. Fantastic defender. I think you always got to mention somebody. Who are you going to take off? I'm not even going to do that. I would probably take off Dylan Brooks. Okay, I'll do it. I think Jaden McDaniels is phenomenal. So that's the one.
I wouldn't worry, Wolves fans. He'll make it next year. It always happens with this award. You have to like, OG, we did this forever with OG. Mm. Oh, how's OG not on one of these teams? How's OG not on one of these teams? And I say it enough. And then he gets like the credit that he gets on one of these teams. I will guarantee it now. Jaden McDaniels will be on an all defensive team next year. I'm calling my shot. But it does happen with this award. You really you need the swelling of support for a year where maybe you don't make the cut. And then it sort of translates, I feel like, into the next year. But
de-swelling for sure. Yeah.
Did you have a snub?
Yeah, I actually think there's a lot of snubs. No, Giannis, I think, is a surprising one. He got more total votes and more points than Bam Adebayo. But Brook Lopez is the center for the Bucks, so Bam makes it as the second center.
Yeah.
And Giannis doesn't make it because OG Anunoby got talked about last year. Weird. That's a weird one to me. No Anthony Davis, I think, is a big snub because we're seeing him in the playoffs right now, and he's clearly the best defensive player in the league, but he missed a huge chunk of time during the regular season. This is a regular season award. Also weird that Marcus Smart won Defensive Player of the Year last year, not making the team. He wasn't as good defensively this year. Derek White definitely was better than him. But certainly some snubs. You can make a whole third team of all defensive players.
12 different guards received first place votes out of the 100 ballots cast. Some of them were a little perplexing, I will admit. Some of the names that got a vote here or there. But for the most part, the 10 guys they named, and then some of them just not making it. You went through them, McDaniels, Giannis, AD. I mean, they're right there on the list. Are they getting rid of positions for this moving forward? Or did I make that up in my head last night?
I don't know.
I thought I saw going around where it's like, it's going to be really weird when the first team is just five centers.
I mean, we're going that way, right?
Right.
With Brook Lopez, Jaren Jackson Jr., borderline center, and Evan Mobley, borderline center.
Good point.
But it shows how important those guys are in today's NBA, defending that rim. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, Giannis had more votes than Dylan Brooks, too. But positions, he plays a different position or whatever.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks made it as a guard, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a guard.
Yeah, they start two guards.
Yeah.
Desmond Bane got a vote as a forward. So, explain that one to me.
That's interesting.
There's some weird ones.
That's a weird one.
I guess Mikal Bridges is another name that I always consider as a really elite defensive wing player, and he's gotten some accolades before. Maybe the whole switch up there being traded.
Oh, yeah,
hurt
that's
his
true.
Chances. I don't know. Definitely. There's a lot of great wing
like defense. Claxton is a guy that got a lot of early defensive player of the year buzz, and then Kevin Durant was traded to the Suns, and nobody talked about Nick Claxton anymore.
Right?
That happens.
Yep. He had a great defensive year, no doubt, Claxton. A lot of those bigs did, like Triple J, Brook, Claxton, Embiid. I mean, he obviously deserves some mention here when you're talking about defenders. But let's hear from you guys. Biggest snub, surprise, whatever you want to call it, when it came to the all-defensive teams announced yesterday. Did we ever find out if the Rooks get anything? Did we follow up with anybody? Did the defensive guys get a plaque, a medal?
Like
maybe a sheet of paper? That'd be great.
A certificate?
Like a certificate at school?
I don't know.
A sticker?
Yeah. Way to defend. All defense team.
All right. Tonight's game fives. Let's talk about them. Heat-Knicks is the first game, 7:30 on TNT. The Heat look to secure a series win over the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. A lot of doom and gloom right now, Tass, with Knicks fans. There's some out there trying to stay positive, but there are a lot going. Let's talk about the offseason. You know, who are we trading? What are we doing? What does New York have to do here to at least give us a game six in Miami? Or do you think this one's a wrap?
It sure feels like the Knicks are getting Cavs'd. Whatever happened to the Cavs in the first round where they weren't taking the right shots and they weren't rebounding the way that they should is happening to the Knicks. They need better shot selection. They need to move that rock a little bit more. And, they need to rebound. But at the same time, they started really well in game four there. And now they're down 3-1 because they didn't want to rebound and because they got away from that good shot selection. They started off 10 of 15. Things were looking pretty good offensively, but because they gave the ball away and just weren't ready to do the little things like rebound, they lost this game. So I say bad shot selection, but at the same time, just don't turn the thing over. Because as much as people want to pile on Julius Randle, he was scoring. Everybody, their big three in Barrett, him and Brunson were scoring pretty well. So just don't do the dumb things. And the Heat take advantage of that. They took advantage. Gabe Vincent just working his ass off to pull a Jose Alvarado in the backcourt. And 30 feet away from the rim, another steal early. Again, when the Knicks needed to get some momentum. So if they get that momentum again, they can definitely win at home. But just don't do the dumb things. Quentin Grimes, don't try and dunk on Jimmy Butler when you got a drop-off. That's right there. So don't go and try and win it all in one possession. But also, try and win it all in one possession. You know, rebound. Rebound that thing. Like
oh,
the rebound.
In every possession. There you go.
There you
That's
go.
That's good. Because the Heat aren't going to beat themselves. That's the thing to me. Like, they'll have a poor shooting night, but they're giving effort everywhere else. They're defending. They're trying things, switching from man to zone, double teams, all this kind of stuff. You know the Heat are going to play a game that can win a playoff game. The Knicks just have to do the same thing. They need everything to go right. They need a good Julius Randle game. They need a clutch Jalen Brunson game. And they got to hit some threes. I was watching game three, I suppose, over at Grisham's house. There was a Knicks fan in attendance.
Oh, Keenan.
He was asking for Evan Fournier to play.
Oh, boy.
That's how bad it's gotten for Knicks fans. They're like, we need somebody to make some three-pointers. Yeah. Fournier is still a Knick. I looked it up. He hasn't basically played since February. He got a little time at the end of the season when it was tank time and they'd already secured their seed. But if you're asking for Evan Fournier, things are dire.
Yeah.
Things are dire in New York right now.
The Knicks specifically, in my opinion, need two things here tonight. They need, and you're going to be able to tell within the first 3 minutes, you usually can with this guy, they need the massive Mitchell Robinson game to like go to work on the boards here, clean up everything inside there, and at least neutralize Bam, and if not, obviously give us more opportunities on the offensive end. He needs to do that. The other thing is they desperately need the Julius Randle game where he suddenly hits 5 or 6 three-pointers. I'm not sure he's got
it,
but they need it because they do not right now have enough quality shooters that are making a difference in the series. I think Brunson's been pretty excellent. Barrett attacks, and as you know, at times he has great moments and then he sort of disappears, but they need the huge Julius Randle game because a big difference maker too in this series has been Miami's depth. That second unit has been sort of dominating here. Like, these guys are all contributing in Lowry and Martin. And obviously, you know, just like it goes sort of down the roster here, these guys that come in, you know, Duncan Robinson hitting threes and stuff like that. So I'm not sure that you're going to get that really from the Knicks, you know, especially with the Quickley injury and all of that. Who is playing tonight? Doubtful? Out?
He didn't play last game,
he's in
right?
the boot last game.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a go tonight, but Randall, you need to hit those threes tonight. At least see if you got it in you early. You're a streaky shooter. We'll see if Madison Square Garden can rally the Knicks to a Game 5 victory here, or do the Heat smell blood? And this could be, you know, a scary Jimmy game, too. There's always that lurking. Jimmy, oh, God, shushing the MSG crowd or something like that. Sending him home waving. I mean, you can picture it.
He didn't play the last game in MSG, right? He didn't play
Game 2.
Game 2.
Yeah.
That was the one where he was like walking off
oh,
the
yeah,
court.
Oh, yeah, right.
Mm. I'll see you soon.
Mm.
See you soon.
All right, we'll see. The second game tonight, Lakers-Warriors, 10 o'clock on TNT. Is this the end of the Warriors dynasty? Is this the end? Or what does Steve Kerr even do here? He has switched things up and guys starting and Looney not playing and all this. What do you think? Do you have any read on a game 5 here in the Bay?
I'm just excited. I can't wait. Like, this to me seems like the premier game of the playoffs so far, because we got LeBron coming into a closeout game knowing that if they win this one, they get a little bit more rest for the conference finals, which would be huge for LA. It's also a home game against the end of the dynasty. Conditions are perfect for an absolute classic here. I think it's going to be a Steph Curry cooking kind of game, because when the cards are down for the Warriors, that's when they finally decide, we're going heliocentric. We don't want to do it. Strength in numbers is the way that the Warriors would rather play. But when it comes down to it, Steph Curry is happy to go for 50 points in a Game 7 like he did against Sacramento and just shoot more than he has the entire year. I assume it'll be very similar tonight, so if this is the end of the Warriors dynasty, I expect them to go out swinging at the very least.
Yeah, I expect role players to play better. It was a super close game the other night. It wasn't a blowout by any means. It came down to the wire. They just struggled at the end of the game. So I expect their depth to be a little bit better. Their lineup change of putting Gary Payton II worked. He was really good. And so I imagine they stick with that. Board a little bit better and probably go back to Gary Payton II more. He only played 23 minutes, but was awesome. 15 points, plus 3 in his minutes. So I think they found something. And you know, they've got performances out of a bunch of guys. So it's not dire by any means, at home anyway.
The fun chess match in this series has been the Warriors. Hey, Steph Curry pick and roll, get AD into the action. But then Ham's counter was like moving AD off guy, especially Draymond Green, who wants to always set that pick for Steph Curry. So he's on somebody else. But I wonder if tonight, specifically, like you said, desperate, wherever AD is, that's the guy that's coming in pick and roll action with Steph Curry to get him out on the perimeter to then force you know, the defense to stretch a little bit and then have maybe Clay hit some threes. Maybe it is Poole a broken man, or does he have a game in him here? He'll get, I would imagine Kirk gives him an opportunity in this one. It won't be a long leash, but
not a long leash,
you know, he can catch fire, this guy, but maybe his confidence is just completely shaken right now. I'm not sure. But I would look to see how aggressive Curry is in putting AD in any sort of action. All action, because Ham did an awesome job. Like, all right, we'll just move Ham off of Draymond Green. You want Draymond Green to always set the pick and roll. You don't want Wiggins as much. You don't want some of these other guys out there, but I think they should just seek him out.
Yeah, Wiggins can score. Thing. Like, you can run a pick and roll with Wiggins. Yeah. He's not a playmaker like Draymond is in a 4-on-3. He missed a lot of open threes in game 4, but he had 3 20-point games against Sacramento. Hasn't had one yet against LA. And if it's pick and roll mode for the Warriors, Wiggins is going to have some looks, so he's got to knock him down.
Look, both the Knicks and the Warriors are in a tough spot here. I think it's 95% of teams that are down 3-1 go on to lose that series, right? So they're in the driver's seat, the Heat and the Lakers are. But which series is more likely to end tonight, in your opinion? Because we do have the Game 5s at least at home for New York and Golden State.
That's the thing going for New York. They're at home. But that one's the one that feels way worse. Again, the Knicks shot really well last game, and they still lost. That was their problem. They shot decent from three, decent enough to win. They matched the Heat scoring-wise. They just couldn't do the shooting-wise, I should say. And then they lost because they're not fighting. The life for that team feels far, far worse. Mm. Worse off than the Warriors.
Would you agree, Trey?
More likely to end, definitely, the Knicks. I mean, the Heat, the only game they've lost, Jimmy Butler didn't play. And I think it kind of goes that way. I think we're more likely to see a classic Jimmy Butler, Madison Square Garden moment than the Knicks actually pull out the win. So that one's over, I do think, tonight.
All right. You tell us out there watching right now live on YouTube, listening to the podcast later, tweet at us, at NoDunksInc. Which series more likely to end, Heat-Knicks or the Lakers-Warriors? We got to take one more break. It's a quick one. When we come back, very funny tweet of the night.
Hey guys, whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. No sound effects, I don't have them loaded up, and I got too much going on over here. Good news, guys, I finally got the notification from Shopify that the pickleball paddle I've had my eye on is back in stock.
Yes.
I have not purchased it yet. Oh. Why? Because I stink at pickleball! Got my ass handed to me yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, oh my God, so bad. Anyway, Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling scented soap or peddling pickleball paddles, how's that for alliteration?
Nice one.
Thank you. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen's, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. By the way, did you know Shopify is Canadian?
No.
I
did not know that.
Headquarters in Ottawa.
Wow.
Homer. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/nodunks.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
This might be controversial, but the Tweet of the Night, it comes from me, from myself. Trey Kirby tweeted last night, I asked AI to create an image of Kevin Garnett playing Jenga, and wow, look at the results on this. This is crazy. I love the responses. This is exactly how I pictured it. You can tell it's AI because of the hoodie. AI can do hands now? We're doomed.
Yeah, that's true.
These are real.
Yeah.
This is a real show that existed. Area 21, we didn't know it at the time, but it basically was a real-life AI script. You just type in a prompt, and it actually made it to TNT. Kevin Garnett meets Backpack Kid.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Kevin Garnett plays Jenga. Kevin Garnett watches contortionists dancing. Yep. It all happened. And he always did it with his hoodie halfway on his head.
He sure did.
There were, like, entire blog posts written about how Kevin Garnett was able to keep a hoodie on only half of his head. Incredible stuff. Incredible times. But for me, this is really how I do use AI. I know someday it'll probably take over our lives and maybe turn on us, but right now I just put a celebrity in and have them do something weird, like Vin Diesel eating a tuna sandwich. Tom Cruise carrying groceries. What would it look like?
Right. But a lot of the times right now, it, like, there's like a mangled finger.
There's always something,
like, something
weird.
Something distorted. Yeah.
Yeah, but they really knocked it out of the park on this one with Kevin Garnett. Can you imagine that guy playing Jenga? That's exactly what it would look like.
So who are you in that photo? Which Kevin Garnett are you when you play
Which of the
Jenga?
Four?
Yeah.
Mouth open, pulling, mouth pushing, mouth tongue. Is it gonna fall? Or intense face, eyeballing my next move? I think I'm the ooh mouth, number two, personally.
Okay.
That one's my favorite. The only one where you can see his ear.
That's right.
Big ear fan.
Tasty, who are you when you what play Jenga?
What a good segment. I cannot go away to wait and watch this segment on YouTube. It's in full, I imagine.
Oh, we don't know.
I hope so.
I bet it exists out there.
Because this was, I'm sure, it was a great segment. I'm number four. Kevin Garnett's just.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
What's
going to
happen?
Too.
What is going to happen? Is that that's what that face is saying?
My favorite part about number four, he's giving like the ooh to this Jenga setup. Three blocks, it appears, have been pulled. Like, it's, like, not that crazy a game yet to me to be like... Like, that thing's far from toppling, my gut says. I know we can't see the bottom of it, but...
I don't know. It looks a little wobbly.
Does it? I don't know. Anyway. Did we ever find out how he kept the hood up? Was it just perspiration?
I thought he credited
thought he
it
said
to, like...
stubble, no?
Yeah, I thought it was stubble, his hair, like, barely it. Being grown back. Mm-hmm. Like a makeshift Velcro on his head, kind of.
Because it is a very light... hoodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't they take much abrasion.
Yeah, they were always like that, I feel like. That light hoodie variation.
Yeah, summer hoodie. All right. There is a full segment. It looks to be on Facebook. He's playing against Kendrick Perkins in Jenga.
I'm just watching over your shoulder as he gently touches that low block. I mean, he's going back to it like 1,000 times before pulling it
out. I mean, they're into it. They are so into it.
Well, I believe that. So Kevin Garnett is into whatever he's
totally.
Doing, man. He's intense.
Totally.
They have the cameras on at all times.
Here. I got a feeling that Perk's going to win this one.
Okay. I have a little trivia here before we say goodbye on today's podcast. Again, Jokic, his 10th career playoff triple-double. This is from, you know where, Statitudes. He's the second fastest player to get to 10 triple-doubles in the playoffs. He took 58 games to get there. Do you know who's done it faster and then maybe some of the other ones behind Jokic on the list? 10 triple-doubles in the playoffs, fewest amount of games. Who did it faster than Jokic?
Rondo?
Rondo took 92 games, so he's fourth.
Oof.
Oscar Robertson on the list?
He's not on this
Magic
list.
Johnson?
Magic Johnson is the answer. 26 games. That's it for Magic there.
Wow.
And then the other names are fun. A lot of some of them current players. A couple of them have been coaches.
LeBron?
LeBron is there, 132 games.
Some have been coaches.
Yeah.
Coaches getting a triple-double.
Like, I mean,
Jason Kidd,
91.
Yep.
He just beat Rondo. There's two more current players you guys haven't named, and then one legend.
Westbrook.
Keyword legend.
Larry
Bird, 151.
Larry Bird.
Westbrook, 98
Westbrook,
games.
A good one.
Final one. Did it faster than LeBron?
Faster than LeBron? Luka?
Nope.
He probably isn't.
No, he played that many. This guy took 123 games, so it's a decent chunk. Guy played a lot of playoff games.
123.
He's playing right now.
Draymond Green?
Ding, ding, ding.
Nice.
Magic, Jokic, Kidd, Rondo, Westbrook, Green, LeBron, Larry Bird.
That's pretty good.
All right. Talked a little Jenga. KG perk, and then a little trivia at the end. We'll call it there. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll find out whether they both wrap up in Madison Square Garden in San Francisco, and we'll be back to talk about them tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, so join us live here from the Classic Factory. Also, tomorrow we'll have a new No Buffs in the afternoon. Survivor is on tonight as well. Busy, busy night on your television. Thanks for joining us here. Hit the like button, subscribe, leave your boys a 5-star rating and review if you're a podcast listener. Till then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and we're officially at 69,000. We're at 68,000. I was going to lie, but forget it, because the number's pretty good, 68,969.
That's sort of nice. A tiny nice.
Lowercase nice.
Brace the day, people.